This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. This is Scott Jordan here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Well, we're back. We had a two-hour break earlier tonight. We had a special event where Spectrum Radio Network hosted a webinar between Bill Ryan, BBS Radio listeners, and Project Avalon members, where Bill answered live questions posed via Project Avalon chat. Carrie Cassidy also joined us for the last half hour. It was a fascinating event and one on which I hope we can do again in the future. Tom, how you doing?
I'm good. Well, tonight we have a guest that's also on BBS Radio, Alan Steinfeld, who's right before us, actually. He's been a host and producer of the New Realities television show for the past 15 years for Time Warner Television, New York City. In that time, he has produced over 500 interviews, according to his bio, but I think he's done well over 2,000. Yeah. With the leading-edge thinkers, paradigm thinkers and shifters, religious leaders from all over the world. He is the author of the book Careers in Alternative Medicine, published by Rosen Publishing, and it's now in its third edition. He has co-authored a play. He's recently directed the narrative film Never Wear a Dead Man's Shoes. He has a Bachelor of Arts at the State University of New York in Buffalo. He's a traveler, but he calls Manhattan his home. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you. Great to be back here on PBS. You know, I'm... It feels like home, and
it is home.
it is the home station there, especially for the kind of stuff we're doing. You know, the themes of my program are similar to what you're doing, to what Bill Ryan's doing. There can't be enough of us doing these types of programs, because the more this information's out there, the more the world can change. So we're all in it together. That's what I feel.
Sure.
I agree with that as well.
Yeah.
And what I want to try to cover tonight, I want to dig down a little. You've done, like Tom was saying, over 2,000 interviews with people in all different areas and spectrum of life experience. We recently interviewed, it hasn't been aired yet, but we recently interviewed your uncle.
Yes,
George Steinfeld.
Yes.
And he was just... The depth on that man and his life experience is exceptional, to say the least. And I really enjoyed it. That'll be aired January 4th, just so people know. But I wanted to ask you, how did you get into this life path? What was your inspiration? Did you always know you were going to be doing this, or did it just sort of happen?
Well, I didn't know I was always going to be doing this, but, you know, my Uncle George is my father's brother, and George was like the psychiatrist or the psychologist. He's really a psychologist, and his early studies were about perception and how we know reality, and he and my father would discuss these kind of philosophical questions when I was young. So there was, and my father was a seeker as well. He was a spiritually open person, and my Uncle George, you've talked to, started a prison ashram program in Danbury Prison. And so there was this, already this awakening and openness within the family. I didn't have to like get there on my own in a way. I was sort of led there because of my associations, and that's so there wasn't a lot of stuff to overcome. I mean, my father was brought up religious, Orthodox Jewish, but then he became a Buddhist and lots of different avenues of thought. So the door was open, and it's like, you know, when you have the opportunity like that to explore spirituality at a young age, and it answers certain questions about the world that science can't answer and religion can't answer, it makes you more aware that there's these other possibilities that are beyond both science and religion. You know, they all have their place, but what I'm trying to talk about is a level of spirituality, a level of the eternal nature that we all seem to have. And I think that's what this new time is moving into. I think UFOs, ETs, that's all about that, astral projection, out-of-body travel, near-death experiences. We're realizing we're greater than the material world that we've been programmed to think that is all there is. So I've been fortunate to have a early jump start in that area, and I just kept running with the ball, you know? So. Right. Here I am.
You ran with that philosophically at an early age. You had influences around you. What got you into the broadcasting part of it?
Well, let me just go back to the early influences because those things wouldn't have meant anything to me if I didn't have the experience, you know, to back up the philosophy and the knowledge. So I started to have outer body experiences, and so did my father, and I'm not sure about my uncle, and then I started to have weird dreams about UFOs and sort of being abducted and those kinds of things that definitely were not answered in any mainstream sort of way. But then there was a literature that said, hey, you know, there's this, other people have had similar things. So I started to find people who had similar experiences. Instead of just asking them what was going on, I created a format where I could legitimately just seek people out and say, tell me about your experiences. So I started a television show in Manhattan Cable. And I was able to meet lots of different people because I had a television show. And I do the show, and maybe you do this show for yourself. I'm doing it because I want to understand a greater capacity of the world. I want to understand what else is there. I mean, I'm thirsty for knowledge and excitement, and we need knowledge in order to back up the experiences, to explain experiences. So that's why I started the program, so I could understand what was happening to me.
That gave you a broad base of information where you could draw from other people's experiences to fill out your knowledge base to answer some of your own personal questions.
Well, isn't that why I can't help being the interviewer, but isn't that why you both do this show? Because you are aware there's something more, you're curious?
Of course.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we've been doing this for about 30 years now, at least for myself anyway.
Right. So now you have a good excuse for doing it. You're on the radio and people are listening. So that's what I feel. Well, I'm curious about all this. I'm asking the questions. Why can't I share what I'm finding out with others, and maybe they'll benefit from it too? So, and this has taken me into some amazing avenues.
And from that, what I'd like to know is, since you have come in contact with so many people, just brilliant people, you interviewed Ram Dass, Deepak Chopra, all kinds of huge names. How has that affected you? How has, if you can go back and filter back through, you know, your life, and then bring it up to now, has that evolved you or changed you or affected you? And what is that process like?
Well, thank you. That's a great question. I think any time I learn something new, there's a shift. And that may be learning something new about myself or learning something new about the world. So I try to learn something in each interview that I do with people. I mean, one of the most impactful interviews I did was with Bruce Lipton, The Biology of Belief. And me and my girlfriend, we were traveling California. We knew Bruce Lipton lived in the mountains of Santa Cruz. So I called him. I got his number somewhere. We showed up at his house, and we sat with him for 90 minutes. He talked in this really hot summer day. You can see on the video, his armpits are just sweating. But he just laid out, and this was before he ever published any books. It was sometime in the early 2000s or maybe late 1990s. But what was so impactful about that was he was saying that the evolution is already complete on an individual level. And evolution is not something Darwin said, that it's a chance mutation, that evolution is geared by the intention of the consciousness. And so he talked about Lamarckian evolution, which is about direction and a bigger picture than Darwin. But he was saying that we go from, let's say, a single cell to many cells that form a multicellular organism. So let me see if I can explain it. We go from the one to the many to the one to the many. So these single cells got together and formed communities of cells that became another organism, and those cells were incorporated into the organism. So this is the process of evolution. The many get together and form a bigger collective one. So we're in the next stage of evolution. We are a planet with many different divergent cultures and people, but we're coming together as a singularity with the internet, with this incredible age of communication and the varieties of communication. If we can maintain peace long enough and stop the wars, we can come into a great oneness of humanity. So the amazing thing about that is this process is not confined to Earth. When the Earth comes together as one humanity, the next step in that evolution is to meet other communities of planets out there. I mean, it was just like a light bulb moment where he led me through this natural process of our cosmic galactic evolution. It's like, of course, we're obviously not the only life form, but we have this delusion that we are, you know. And so when Lipton led me through this process of evolution, and it was in a way proof that we weren't alone and that we're on the verge of the next step of a galactic community. Does that make sense?
It does. It almost sounds like, if you've ever heard the saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will come. But if you apply that onto a whole human level, if when the humanity is ready, the next level will come.
And we're getting ready, whether we like it or not, already. I mean, of course, on your shows, you go into the UFO thing. These are sentient beings that are coming in and out of our consciousness in order to prepare us for a shift. And I'm writing about some of this in a book that will be published at some point, where to meet the ET beings means we have to radically change who we think we are. And we can only do that. We can really only do that once we come into a wholeness, because we need to have that solidity. And they're waiting for that. You know, disclosure and contact are two parallel paths that are moving through human consciousness. Do you know what I mean by that, disclosure and contact? Disclosure is the government saying, hey, they're here. Contact is the ETs saying, hey, we're here. You know, and they sort of are at odds with each other, but they're sort of, you know, working along the same path to prepare not just individuals, but it is the biggest event that has ever happened to humanity, is discovering the other. And I think this is what 2012 is about. This is what the shift in consciousness is about. This is what everything's coming to that point and saying, hey, guys, this is, we're not alone. You got, hey, guys, you got company. Really, this is what they're saying. So that's part of the new realities that I'm really excited about. So that's a big part of what I'm doing. And you're doing that too, right? What's your interest in all that UFO stuff?
Well, Tom is the president of the MUFON Ontario.
Oh.
So, I mean, he's been in the UFO field for, you know, 30 years. So he's done over 100 abduction cases. He's done, you know, looked in all the cases, and you know, a lot of them in Canada, some in the States. My focus is, although I was with Tom as a field investigator, with him back in the early 90s with his group in MUFON Toronto, as well as the Cambridge UFO group and other, you know, UFO groups that are here locally in Ontario. I was more into the parapsychology and those areas, and doing studies on NDEs and OBEs and doing remote viewing tests with people and all that stuff.
But you know what I found, what both those things have in common, the alien abduction and the UFO encounter and the OBEs and the near-death experiences, they both have a state of consciousness that is altered within those experiences. That's why I call my show New Realities, because when...
And experiencers.
Yeah, yes. But you're in a shifted state. You're in a paranormal state of awareness in both in those situations. You know what I mean? At least that's my experience.
That's very much
on that one.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what it is. Is that based on my experience, is that all these areas have a very similar, if not the same, kind of a paradigm. You know, they have the same effect on the individual. So whether you saw a ghost or you saw a Virgin Mary, whether you saw a gray alien, the field is the same, that the person creates a new consciousness and a new understanding of their surroundings.
Right. I think that's a really important point. I think reality shifts. You can no longer be who you were before you had those experiences. And while you're in that experiences, it's as if you're high on drugs or drunk or something like that. You're not in your normal state of mind. And I think this is going to happen as these ETs appear. They're going to shift our consciousness so we will be a different human. The reality that we actually will be functioning in will morph into something we have yet to know, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm really fascinated with. That's what really is at the bottom of my investigations. How can we think differently about the world? What changes our thoughts and perceptions? And this goes back to my Uncle George. His whole thing was studying perception. And that's really what I'm trying to understand, because reality is created by the perceptions we
have
put out there.
Yeah.
We've been programmed for.
There's no doubt, because, my background, I'm a hypnotherapist, so... understanding how the brain works and understands and perceives, has been a study of mine for all these years. And when I was involved with the abduction phenomenon, that really brought in a new something different,
I'm glad you brought that up. And the reason I think abductions are so traumatic is because we are in a reality that's so different than what we used to. I mean, yes, meeting these great beings can be quite unnerving, but the state of consciousness, or maybe one produces the other, meeting these aliens might put us into an altered state, but that's the trauma. That's why most people don't remember, or they lose awareness of some parts of it, because it's like dreams, you know. We're not used to functioning in those altered states, and in meeting an alien will put you in an altered state, believe me, because it's not a normal reality, really. And
yeah. And of course, you know, it's the fear factor too. You know, automatically, when something is strange or unusual, you know, we're ready to run. So
already a run, because reality has shifted. This is where I'm really. This is what I feel. Is so traumatic. We're ready to run, not because there's just these scary-looking beings, but because no one ever told us that this was possible. That's what is so trauma. It's traumatic to be abducted by an alien being and, you know, to be sort of controlled by them. But we're not controlled. They're controlling our minds, and with enough power over our own minds, we can have control. So
and Tom has experience with that, because Tom was actually talking to an abductee, and they got out of the experience. And then Tom used that as a test to tell another abductee how to get out of the experience.
Well, you know, I got out of an experience too. I think I was abducted. I was walking aboard the ship. I didn't see these beings, but I kept touching my third eye. I kept putting my finger up to my third eye, and I sort of got the message like, hey, we just can't work with you anymore. And then I was back in my bed. But because I had my own willful control over myself, that's how I got out of it. What happened with your guy, Tom?
Well, I mean, we had numerous situations. One thing I found about, you know, most individuals that have these type of circumstances is that the initial reaction is fear, because they don't understand what really is going on. Once they are able to comprehend that, you know, what it might be, and they have some sort of understanding and maybe have a way of maybe communicating. Like if you tell them, look, rather than, you know, run away or fight or do whatever, try to communicate, you know, with whatever the entity may be. And by doing so, I found that a lot of these individuals had a different experience. It was no longer a fearful type situation. It was more, you know, like a friendship type situation. And where the initial thing was a very aggressive, fearful thing, then it became such a friendly, and even in situations where, you know, there was pregnancies involved and, you know, children and so on, they turn out to be positive experiences with these individuals.
Well, I think the ETs are here. It's like, you know, it's like a dental appointment. You know, they do want our genetics, but we also have an agreement to share that, because I think they're giving us something. So it's only our self-imposed fear that makes it so awful, and it's great that you're helping people deal with it, because I really do think that they're here for their evolution and our evolution. At least that's my theory about it.
Definitely, I think our evolution, because it definitely changes the perception of that individual, of their surroundings and, you know, belief systems that they may have had before.
Well, I think that was one of my early childhood experiences that led me towards even calling this show New Realities, because you're absolutely right. But I also think it's here for their evolution, because they're taking our genetics. Part of the reason I feel they're here is to weave our human genetics with their ET genetics to create another race of beings. And they're doing this because they forgot how to feel. And humans are definitely abundant in feeling, and we're recognized throughout the universe because we have a great capacity to create and feel and express. And That's what they're here for, because they know that's ultimately the experience that we've incarnated for, the feeling experience.
That you still have the you still have the fear, in multiple cases. I had a case myself that I worked with a little bit with Tom, mostly with my research partner Jacob, and we had a couple, and it was a husband and a wife and their three children, and it went ran the gambit. It ran, you know, missing time. It was, you know, she lost the baby. There was, you know, there was all kinds of physical evidence. She had a hole above her, well, in her lower abdomen that looked like if you took a lit cigarette and burned it into the body and went down about 2 inches, and then it started healing, not from the top, but from the bottom up. She had that, you know, physical evidence. All kinds of missing time where you could, we could track it down to when they left the party at the parents, talked to the parents. They told us the time they left. You could track how long it took to get from point A, which would be the parents, to point B, which would be their house. And the babysitter was there looking after the children. So we had a time when the babysitter was taken home. And the amount of time it took to get from their parents to their home, to take the babysitter home, there was 2 extra hours. Where that 2 extra hours went, we don't know. But now it's more than just a story. Now we have the parents backing up when they left, the babysitter backing up when they got there. You have the children having nightly, or not nightly, but every now and then they don't wake up with nosebleeds. I had them knocking on my door at 3 a.m. because they were afraid the aliens were coming to take them away. You know, you have stories like this that start out mired in fear, and it's just, and I found this also in NDEs.
Yeah. Well, there is fear, and the fear, like I'm trying to, I think, investigate myself, is because reality is not what we thought it was. You know, reality is more solid than the ground beneath your feet. And when that starts to shake, like in earthquakes, people are very traumatized. But you imagine everything we think is true about the world is not, that you can move through walls, that, you know, there are these beings that exist in other dimensions. Our belief systems are so solid. That's partly what's traumatic. And of course, all these procedures with, you know, putting instruments up, that's very traumatic too. And to feel helpless is, I'm not saying that's not, you know, should be fearful, but there, if we can get a hold on what I call new realities, we'll be able to meet these beings on equal ground. We'll be able to shift how we think the world is, because the world is not what we've been told. Like all, both your research is telling you, this is what my research, this is what Bill Ryan's research is saying, that, hey, you know, what we've been told is true about the world. There's a lot more that we haven't been told. And this is where we're all connecting in this sort of new genre of investigation, right?
I mean, yeah, for sure.
So totally.
So that's why I'm doing my show, so I can find a new reality, so I can think differently about the nature of who we are and help other people, because I think that is the only way where things are going to change. We need to think in different ways, you know, and we need to break out the box we've been conditioned. We've been conditioned, and that's why I think the Project Camelot's so important, is that they are undoing the conditioning, and people are saying, what is he saying, you know? But it's in a way that simple. Just be open to all the things you're hearing on this program, on my program. It's like, just consider what might be possible, and then we will have a shift in the consciousness of the world. So
exactly, yeah. That's
what I'm so excited about, doing these kind of programs and finding people. I mean, meeting someone like Nassim Harmim. You know who Nassim is?
Oh, yeah.
I interviewed him. I have a great interview with him. And when he mixes science and philosophy and black hole technology, he's saying you can build mini black holes that will create anti-gravity and be anywhere in the universe in a matter of seconds. And then he has the science to back it up. And not only has the science to back it up, but he has a science to show how off mainstream science is. When I tell people like that, like Neil deGrasse Tyson at the American Museum of Natural History Planetarium, I say, hey, this guy has a theory of black hole. You have to hear it. And they don't want to know about it because...
No, they don't want to know. Because they've got a paradigm. They've built a paradigm. They're safe and comfortable within their paradigm, and they'd more than they'd rather just stay there. Just in addition to Nassim Harriman, his paper just got accepted and peer-reviewed. He had previously won an award for his paper, but recently, just I'd say within the last 2 weeks, he just got it peer-reviewed, and it was an amazing thing. He was very excited about it.
Well, that paper is actually called the Schwarzschild proton,
yeah.
And what he's actually proving in that is that the weight of the proton is different than what traditional science is telling us. When they said that the weight of the proton was whatever they said it was, they had to include two other forces in that weight. So scientists, quantum physicists invented the strong force and weak force.
Weak force, yeah.
And then Nassim says, look, if you go to what the volume of quantum energy in a square meter of space is, and use this measurement for the proton, you don't need these two other forces. A matter of fact, there's a black hole in the center of every atom as well that's creating the illusion of these other forces. So he says, which is revolutionary, there is no strong force, there is no weak force, there's only two forces in the universe, electromagnetism, which is throwing things out, and gravity, which is pulling things in. So therefore, electromagnetism and gravity have a relationship, and you can use the inverse of that relationship, you can create anti-gravity. This
exactly.
is what's so revolutionary.
And you could tack on the electric universe onto there, and it'll answer even more questions. But we got to go to a break right now. We could just keep talking and talking, because you're on the same page as we are.
Well, it's exciting, isn't it? Yeah.
But we do have to go to a break right now.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's Lepingo, lapingoproducts.com.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
Hey, and we're back. Just a quick note. Tom, I want to mention this to you. The Lapingo head, the one that fits around the head, in case you don't know, I'll throw it out there for everybody. Lapingo is it's these pads that you can put on your body, and they have crystals sewn into the pad, and they're nanotech crystals. And boy, you can feel it when you put them on. Anyway, I got the one for the head around my neck because I got a sore neck. Or I had a sore neck, but I put that on, and it gets hot. It really gets hot. Unbelievable.
That sounds great. That. Actually, I'd like to find out about those because I did study acupuncture. I have a degree in acupuncture, and
It's like needle. It's like having acupuncture without the needles, the crystals, and they get hot. Like it warms up, and it's not a heat thing. I can't really explain it.
What it does is it creates your body creates circulation, and that circulation is so extreme that in your brain it feels like heat, and you know, this pinching feeling, and you know, that sort of thing, because it's rushing blood to that particular area.
Wow, sounds great. Where can I find out about that?
On lapingoproducts.com, the website.
Okay, it's great to have some sponsors. I have to do that for my show. I just don't have time. But well,
that's one of our sponsors, and it's definitely a great product. I want to get the Lapingo shirt. There's a shirt where that has it. The crystals are crushed and they're embedded into the shirt, and you wear the shirt and it covers your whole, you know, your whole upper torso. So it's. I wore it once when Tom brought me over one, and I was freaking. I didn't want to leave with it. I tried to steal it, but it didn't work out. Let's get back to Nassim, because you know what? You brought up an important point about what the way, and it also refers back to the other gentleman you were talking about that you sat down with and had that conversation. Bruce Lipton. There is a connection there, because Bruce Lipton, if I remember correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong. He spoke about having the same thing in three different petri dishes. Is this the right guy? And it depends upon the environment.
Yeah.
How that thing grows, or what it, whether it becomes muscle tissue or muscle fiber.
Yeah.
So it was the environment that it was. The cell didn't dictate. It was the environment that dictated what it was to become. And this is sort of keys into what Nassim's talking about, because he just doesn't talk about physics. I mean, he talks about pyramids, and he talks about the Ark, and he talks about, you know,
But the big thing about Lipton's work and the environment, he says it's our belief about the environment that also creates our biology. So there's a chaos out there, but it's our perceptions, and our perceptions of what's out there are influenced by our beliefs and our education, going back to this idea of new realities and all that. So he says that in the biology of belief, it's that projection of what we think is in the environment that affects us the most. And I think, you know, for me, that, I mean, I understand what you're saying as far as Nassim's work, but it also touches on another aspect of what I'm trying to do, which is go inward into the human being and have us be more sensitive creatures, you know? That's another aspect of my program. How do we feel more of our capacity as human beings? That's a big part of our evolution, but it's different right. than what you were asking. But
no, but everything, you're right, though. Everything sort of, it's like the hub of a wheel. There's many spokes, but all the spokes lead to the same place.
Right. And so I investigate new sciences on new realities, but I also investigate human potential. And I think that potential lies with the artists. I mean, I have a great interview with Alex Gray. Do you know his work? The visionary artist, where he's painting the subtle energy bodies. He's painting energy. He's showing us the invisible. I mean, art itself makes the invisible visible. And so we are evolving a greater sensitivity of who we are. We're evolution of our cultures, because we can feel more. There's a greater articulation of experience, if you know what I mean. Evolution happens because we can express in more subtle details what's happening in the world around us. That's how language evolves. But that's how human experience evolves, and that's how our contact with these other dimensions will evolve. People already are in contact with higher dimensions, alternate dimensions, but we don't have a language, we don't have a frame of reference, we don't have a cognitive factor. Again, going back to my Uncle George and cognition, as we develop the language that these shows are using, more of human potential comes online and they say, hey, maybe I had that experience, or maybe I had an out-of-body experience or near-death experiences. So people, like, as we start to play with the language, people start to recognize what others have cognized. This is a big part of what I'm trying to communicate, cognition and recognition. When right. you cognize something, there's actually no place to put it because it's the unknown. It's something we have yet to experience. So, but if we can sort of frame it somehow, someone else comes along and says, hey, maybe that's what happened to me. And this is part of our whole evolutionary mode of being.
Right.
Does that make sense? So I think
it does. I had a question, but it left me while I was trying to just roll with what you were saying there.
Okay.
I was picturing a bunch of different things, and I had, okay, that's a good question. And then
you didn't
lose me, but I was caught up in what you were saying, and I was visualizing, and I was going, yeah, that makes it good. But then I'd lost my question.
Well, it's like it comes down to how do we make known the unknown? How do we know what we don't know? And, well, there's no way to answer that except to let go of everything we know and embrace the unknown. And this is what the whole ET experience is about. This is what Nassim's work as a physicist, he says, forget what you know, forget your assumptions. Let's look at what we don't know, or let's look at what we know or don't know about what we know, you know?
Right.
So it's like, this is about how to think differently. This is why I'm trying to communicate this. This is about new realities. If I haven't gone too out there for you guys.
No, it's a difference between Buddhism and Zen Buddhism. You have to learn everything there is about Buddhism.
Right.
Once you learn everything there is about Buddhism, then you're ready for Zen Buddhism. But the prerequisite of getting into Zen Buddhism is to forgetting everything you learned about Buddhism and starting fresh.
Right. And so we have to do that every minute in every situation. And I think that's what awakening is about. I think that's what people who have been called spiritually awake have come to being, forget everything you know about yesterday, about yourself, about everything, and start fresh. And then people can do that. I'm not saying I can do that because that's like a life journey, but there are people who can do that, and they're really the happiest because they're living in the moment, you know?
Right,
so,
right. It happens to average people all over the world, all the time. They're alive. They drowned, they're dead. They are resuscitated 4 minutes later. They come back. Within a couple months, their family members are saying they don't recognize this person. They don't understand them. They've like changed to a different person. They're seeing things. They have psychic experiences. The person who's died and come back, I mean, they have gone through a crash course in human evolution. And it's disconcerting for them and for their family members.
Well, it's disconcerting, but this is where I think we're moving to as a planet, an awakening. And I think that's a big part of what I do on New Realities is talk to people who say they're awakened to this level of awareness. And that's very exciting because they are living on the edge. And I could put you in touch with some of these people if you want to expand your program in that way, because
we're called Spectrum. And the reason we're called Spectrum is because we don't want to have a narrow focus. Tom actually was Tom's idea. I'll give him credit for this. Tom said, let's not limit ourselves to just say UFOs and paranormal and a couple of other little slots. Let's open it up. Let's go as wide as we can and capture as much, because from what I've understood, it is that wheel with the spokes all coming down to the same hub. It doesn't really matter where you go, because right. you will come back to the same center point.
And that center point, at least how I define it, is consciousness. If you had to call, I mean, that's how the word I would say it is, consciousness, which doesn't in a way mean anything, but it also means everything. It might be a little abstract, but consciousness, awareness, I mean, UFOs, paranormal, out of body, it all comes down to our unique experiences as conscious beings. That's the hub of the wheel as I see it. I mean, you might have your own definition, but so
what do you think?
And for the most part, it's about learning, you know, and not just for us. I mean, it's for everybody. So we learn as, you know, everybody else is learning. And the more knowledge we have, the better decisions we can make.
Right. But knowledge comes in so many forms. I think a big part of our evolution is starting to get back to the body and realize that there's knowledge in the body that is wisdom, too. And we have to expand our understanding of that as well. Movement. I interviewed a woman named Emily Conrad who started something called Continuum. And she says trapped or lodged in the knowledge of the body is the movement of the stars. And she says that's the spiral of the DNA. Actually, her work and Nassim's really hook up because they both connect us as galactic beings. That's what's really exciting about
it. Yeah, Nassim draws a line from the singularity all the way up to the you know, the universe, the mass of the universe.
Right, from the smallest point to the largest point. And there's this singularity that is present. And singularity is consciousness itself. I would call it that. And Nassim has a sort of mystical, spiritual dimension. In my interview with him, you can hear, we go into this whole thing about being present and how the present is creating itself all the time. It was a real great moment of revelation for me talking to Nassim about...
Well, he'll do that to you.
Have you interviewed Nassim for this program?
No, but I've been following Nassim ever since he did his talk, and it was posted on Google, and I was ranting and raving and sending it to all my friends and saying, this will, you know, give you a quantum leap and evolvement. Just watch it. Trust me. It's really long, but watch it anyway.
Yeah. I think he is the next Einstein. I think if he can get some people to really take notice of what he's saying, he can revolutionize the world, and I think he will. You know, it's so exciting to meet people out there who have a vision of what's possible. Most people don't, and most scientists definitely don't. They're just trying to maintain the status quo. That's why there's that quote that science evolves one funeral at a time. Have you heard that?
One funeral when the old scientists die. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and that is a reflection to what you said earlier about forget what you knew today, forget what you knew yesterday. Today is a new day,
right?
And, but that's doing it on the microscopic scale. On the macroscopic scale, we have to wait for the old people that are, you know, are still, they're not washing their, you know, they're not doing the 100th monkey thing.
Right. It just reminded me of that quote by Isaac Asimov where most scientific discoveries don't come with people exclaiming Eureka. It comes with saying, well, that's strange. That's funny. You know, they see something new that's outside their paradigm and what they didn't expect. And suddenly they're, thoughts have to expand to include a greater reality, a greater possibility. And that's scientific evolution. So,
go ahead, Tom.
I wanted to ask you a question. In your bio, you call yourself a historical alchemist. Explain it.
Well, as many ways of looking at that, I love alchemy. I think alchemy is not just the science of turning lead into gold. It's the science of turning the body into spirit, the density of consciousness into the light of our total being. And what I call myself, historical alchemist. Well, I love looking at history and the evolution of history and the transmutation of history and the recapitulation of history. This is one thing I learned from Terence McKenna. He says time is a fractal wave. And so all moments don't look like other moments. Again, it has to do with our point of view and consciousness. But Terence McKenna said that the 1960s, when we had all this cultural change, was a repetition of the Golden Age of Greece. And so is the Renaissance. So it goes from the Golden Age of Greece to the Renaissance to the 1960s. And there's these fractal waves where history repeats itself. And there's this alchemical change throughout history that shows us directions of evolution and change.
Looping groups of events.
We could plot those.
Symbol.
But he's also saying, Terence McKenna also said, that when we hit 2012, we go into a whole new direction and history becomes history, is a famous quote of Terence McKenna. So we're in a new territory, and I think that will be the alchemical moment when all the work of what happened in the Piscean Age is suddenly transformed into a whole new being. The phoenix rises from the ashes. That's sort of, so I think history has a lot to tell us, and letting go of history has a lot to tell us. But there's that famous quote, there's a couple of quotes, from one by George Bernard Shaw that says, what we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history. No, it's just a joke.
Yeah, we keep making the same mistakes.
Exactly. But I think we can plot a movement, a fractal movement that shows us we're getting very close to something different happening, a renaissance of beingness. And I think this is very exciting for all of us. Don't you think so?
Yeah,
I think so. I think that the Mandelbrot is there for a reason. I think the fractal nature of the universe is there for a reason. It should be something that we reflect on, look back on, and go, hey, maybe we're part of that. Oh, wait, we are part of that. If we are part of the fractal nature of the universe, then there is an opening for evolutionary spiritual change.
Right. Well, it doesn't get any more obvious than crop circles. I mean, people say they're hoaxes, but I was there 2 years in the crop circles of England, in Wiltshire, England. And if anyone doubts that an alien race is talking to us, they go to the crop circles, and they're talking to us in a very sophisticated language. And I give lectures on this, and I say, look, if there was somebody at higher consciousness talking to a lower consciousness, are you going to talk down on their level? It's like when you talk to your dog, do you bark at them? No, because you think they understand barking. No, you talk to them in the language of our higher intelligence. Well, that's what crop circles are. They're talking to us in the language of the universe, which Galileo said was geometry, and so did Einstein in some way. So they're talking to us in a very sophisticated, multidimensional language about what's possible. And they're giving us clues to technological evolution and also our spiritual evolution. That's my belief anyway.
Okay, how about the other side, if there is another side?
What, the hoaxing for the crop circles, you mean?
No, I was a crop circle field investigator. I'm with you.
What's the other side?
The other side of the evolutionary chain. There's a lot of talk about the powers that be, that there's a group, the Bilderbergs, the group that is, you know, sort of trying to throw a wrench in the works, trying to slow humanity's progress down for either their reasons or reasons we don't understand. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, you've interviewed enough people. You must have come across the concept.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think there is a force that doesn't want to evolve because they're very content owning the land, owning the property, owning all the money, but they are now seeing the writings on the wall. I mean, they're the people that are keeping the whole UFO thing secret because they'll lose their power. There's definitely those forces, those covert forces that don't want change. And you know what? Change is coming, and they are trying to grab as much resources as they can, but it's like a sinking ship for them, and there's a new dawn happening, and they can only hold on to their power for so long. So in a way, I don't even give that side so much energy because I know that they're sort of on a losing team. They've held on to power. They've manipulated people. They're still manipulating people. And this is why we have to start to think for ourselves and create a new awakening for ourselves. But change is happening too fast, and their power is slipping away rapidly. And that's part of this new golden dawn where those forces won't have the same control. And so...
Yeah, that's one of their catchphrases, actually, the Golden Dawn. That's an Illuminati catchphrase. They love to use that one in movies. And
you know why they love to use it? Because they love to use the very thing that opposes them, you know? So it's a sort of reverse psychology. It's a double talk. Look, they use these sacred symbols for their logos. They use the shell oil. It's like the shell is an esoteric symbol for the soul and the body, the soul being freed from the body. They use the chevron because that's the separation of the higher and lower nature. They're trying to get us. I mean, Jordan Maxwell
and Michael Tesserian talk a lot about that. Yeah,
right. But they try to infiltrate our psyche and our spiritual awareness by using the very things that are here to set us free. So it's as if we can't go there because they're already co-opted by that side. No, let's redefine it. I mean, some people would even say the swastika, but we don't have to go. That was a symbol of power. But then, you know,
they just reversed it. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, we don't have to go there. Just the average symbol that people now associate with corporate power are spiritual forces that we can overcome, you know? So there is that side, absolutely. And if each of us are conscious of just who we are and what we're doing and our programming, we have to wake up from our programming. That's why people are so traumatized when they meet an ET, because their programming doesn't have a place for those realities.
So, right.
That's why I love Jordan Maxwell. He's a brilliant guy, and he's doing great stuff, and he's underappreciated but from the knowledge he's gained. And he knows a lot more than he says, Jordan.
You think so? Have you interviewed Jordan?
I have a great interview with Jordan on YouTube, and we just started to just talk about language. He was talking about the courts being the rule of the sea, as opposed to the rule of the land. I mean, he sort of lost me on some stuff.
Maritime law.
I have a whole like 6-part thing with him on YouTube where people can see a lot of my video interviews. And he's really brilliant. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people. Some people I don't always agree with. I think that David Wilcox can sort of create some of his own things. I love a lot of what he says, but I don't agree with everything. So we all have our own opinions about things.
David Wilcock.
Yeah. I mean, I like him. Great mover of energy. But, you know, we all have our different – David Icke, another great communicator. But he gets a little too much into that those forces, which is okay. But
that's from an educational point of view. You're saying from an educational point of view, yes, be aware of it, but don't mold your reality around it.
Right. Like the I Ching says, know the dark, but stick to the light. You know, you got to know what's out there for sure. I mean, it's not all just, wow, isn't this beautiful? There's many levels And David Icke is serving a purpose, even though I don't agree with this whole concept about the moon being. I think the moon was placed there in our orbit to balance the Earth energies, to move the tides in the sea, to move them, and to replenish life on the Earth. I mean, he has a whole thing about the moon. But, I mean, those are specifics. But in general, there's so many people in this field that have their own opinions, and I honor all of them because they are all trying to do something to uplift humanity, and they all deserve.
They're doing their part. They're doing their part the way they know how to do their part.
And I take a little piece from here, a little piece from there. I mean, I don't believe everything that I hear in the UFO field, but I definitely think David Wilcox, David Icke are doing great jobs.
Yeah, you interviewed Source A. I remember that.
Source A? Who?
Well, that was the two, I forget, the brothers that were
Clay and Sean, they live in New York. I run into them a lot. You know, the thing about them was that I was having a UFO meeting, and these guys come into the meeting and they know so much. We couldn't figure out if they were like CIA or they were just really
good investigators.
Yeah, and I do think they're really good investigators. But, you know, they are so detailed and so on top of it. I haven't talked to them in a while. I should definitely talk to them again.
There you go. There's a reminder for you.
Well, thank you. I did interview Jacques Vallée recently. Do you know his work?
Oh, yeah. Of course. He's been, Tom, you know who Jacques Vallée is.
Of course.
Well, he has a new book out.
Lately, he stepped back from a lot of the, you know, the conventional stuff that he was working with, but I think, you know, his early works were exceptional.
Well, he just wrote a new book called Wonders in the Sky, which traces 2,000 years of UFO sightings, and one of the amazing things about that book is that he's saying the phenomena has not changed in 2,000 years. People are seeing today what they saw and describing it the same way. So it makes you think, will disclosure ever happen, or is this an ongoing, another level of secrecy that human consciousness is not aware of? I do think it is coming to a head. The thing about Jacques Vallée was he was saying that the UFO experience is not about little gray beings and spaceships. It's a much bigger phenomena, a paranormal phenomena that I don't know if I agree with totally, but this might be some truth to that. What do you think, Tom?
Well, you know, one of the things that I, you know, through my experiences, you know, dealing with not only in the UFO field, the paranormal and many other areas that I work with, that all these things seem to have a very common denominator.
What's that?
They have a lot of similarities. It seems that, you know, there might be one source that all these things are coming from. It's almost like we're being tested, you know, and on an individual level and sometime on a larger level.
Well, do you think there are grays? You do think there are grays abducting?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I'm not 100% sure if we're dealing with, you know, like, for instance, you know, a lot of people may say that, you know, there's numerous races that are coming here and you know, there's different dimensional beings and there's all kinds of different things. So the way that I see all these phenomena is that they have a lot of similarities to them. Like, for instance, if you see, you know, an individual who sees a ghost, the first thing that they're going to do is, you know, be afraid. And you know, so fear is a factor. When, you know, somebody sees an alien of whatever type, again, fear falls into it.
Well, it just shows you humans are afraid of a lot of what they don't know.
Exactly. But the what it creates for that individual is very similar. So in other words, you know, if a person who saw a ghost or who saw a religious apparition or an alien, or whatever,
it creates a shift
in their, like you said, in their consciousness and in their perception, right?
Right.
And what it does, like all these phenomena seem to have a very similar effect on the individuals involved, and it gives them that sort of edge that now they shift their ideas of whatever they have been taught before.
Well, so will some drug experiences, so will some shamanic journeys. I mean, I think what you're saying is not, I mean, my belief is not so much for it's from the same source, but it's from opening new possibilities in the human mind when you meet these different types of experiences. I mean, I think the experiences are different. We are developing a language and a distinction for these different types of things. But the shift, yes, that it happens for humans might be the same. But I do think they're different.
The way it's happening right now, it's happening on a larger scale. And I think, like, for instance, organized religion right now is in a very defensive mode. You know, they're losing a lot of their customers, you know, if not to put it another way. So I think by opening this consciousness right now, however is occurring, it will help us to proceed, maybe not, you know, in the next 20, 30 years, but it will certainly happen sometime in the future if we don't do anything major to ourselves, of course.
No, it's helping us to perceive what? That...
Well, I think it's opening our minds right now, right? It's changing us to, you know, evolving a little bit different. Right now, you know, we were accustomed to, and we were taught, you know, specific ways how to dress, how to react, how to pray, how to, you know, all this kind of stuff. We weren't individuals. We were, you know... All one type of controlled being, you know, but right now, the way it's occurring, I think we're starting to open up our minds. And of course, one of the things is that technology is allowing us to reach more people. Programs like ours that we can broadcast now throughout the whole world, basically, is changing, you know, a lot of people's perceptions.
Right, yeah, and it's important, and I think it's the end of the time of religion, hopefully, because religion traps people into a particular belief system, and, you know, most of the wars on the planet are about belief systems, and if we can come into a new understanding where science and spirituality, as I like to call it, can reinforce each other, I mean, there's a science to out-of-body experience. There's a science in near-death. There's a science to incarnational human experience. There's a science to all that. I just talked to someone whose son was the reincarnation of a Tibetan Lama, and he had all these memories and sort of proved it in a way. And so that's not religion, and it's a new type of understanding who we are, and it's very exciting. And that's why the work of Nassim, who has a spiritual basis, and Bruce Lipton, who's coming at biology from a spiritual level, and I think religion no longer has a hold on people because it no longer answers their questions. And it also became involved with what we were just talking about before, those forces that wanted to keep things stuck. You know?
Right. And that threatens, I mean, I guess China is an example of, with it, you know, hacking off the internet and being, you know, in control of access. What are they afraid of? Are they afraid of people getting access to information outside of perceived, you know, status quo information.
Well, is changing their views, right? So if you have a very specific thing that you give people, and all of a sudden, you know, other views come into play, then they're going to start questioning things, and they don't want to have questions being brought.
And that also comes into, like, the government control.
Right, but, well, you know, we have to relate it all back to what is essentially human and the mind, and we are human beings that continually question, and to suppress that is to suppress part of our natural essence. And this is what people are realizing. That's why we're moving into a new renaissance. And it's about this new time. It's about where, it's about new possibilities, really. I mean, the renaissance was this flowering of creativity. And it was that same time that Columbus discovered this new world. Well, we're about to discover a new world and have a flowering of human consciousness and human creativity. And I really feel this is the great excitement we're moving into.
I agree with you completely. Humans cannot be stuck on this planet forever. Either we're going to, you know, destroy ourselves, or an outside force is going to, you know, just like others, you know, civilizations previous to us have been wiped out by events beyond their control, or we're going to get to space, or we're going to get out there. The destiny of the human, I think it was Bob Dean that said the destiny of the human, race is in space. And I believe that. I think that there's no choice. We got to eventually get to that point, either on an internal or an external level.
Well, this is about, yeah, of course. It's about the next level of evolution is seeing the planet as a wholeness. So we go from tribes to countries to planets to a group of planets. It's evolution, you know. It's just the natural way consciousness within creation works, is to start to explore the unknown. Look, humans are everywhere on planet Earth. I don't think there's a place on the planet there haven't been humans. And it's this natural curiosity to explore the unknown. And that's just in our nature. And that cannot be repressed or suppressed. So we're going to explore the unknown. It's going to keep going. You know, that's more important than war, I think, you know.
I agree. It's definitely more important than the war.
And that's why I think creativity is such an important component in this new age, in this new realities that we're moving into. The creative potential in each one of us is a big thing that I like to focus on, because it's the artists, it's the science, the creative scientists that are bringing in these new potentials. And it's also very exciting for me to meet those people. That's why I do my show also, so I can meet those cutting edge scientists.
You get a lot out of it.
Yeah, I have an interview coming up with Lynn McTaggart, who wrote the book The Field. You know that book?
I heard about it. I don't know a lot about it.
Oh, Lynn's an amazing person, but she's basically saying there's a field of energy that connects people, that surrounds us, that science is proving, that and it's non-local in a way. It connects people, but it's not necessarily a linear process.
Right.
It's a whole very involved story, a book that she wrote with the leading scientists. You know, she interviews Hal Puthoff, who I interviewed, who started remote viewing for SRI, Stanford Research Institute.
Yeah, I used to call him all the time.
He's a great guy. And she goes into why this is science, you know, the science behind all that. So that's just another aspect. Yes.
We're going to have to end it here. I think we're over our time. But I want to thank you, Alan, for coming on the show. And I'm going to get in touch with you about some of those people you were mentioning that we could talk to. I'd love to. There's a bunch of people I'd love to get a hold of. I mean, and that's the thing. As many shows as we can get them on talking about this stuff, you know, it benefits everybody. So,
and I want to get some of your guests on. Can you just tell me what you talked to Bill Ryan about, what that whole webinar thing was about?
Yeah, that what that was is something that I originally was trying to set up back in June, I believe. And it was a seminar between all of the members of Project Avalon, which is Bill's private forum, and, you know, people who have been watching the Project Camelot and videos to get a chance to ask Bill questions live where he would answer them live on the radio. And I'd been trying to set it up through Project Avalon, and then he went away, and then he came back, and I got the radio show, just sort of fell in my lap, and I said, hey, I have a radio show now. Surprise.
What kind of questions were people asking Bill?
They were great questions. I mean, it went on for 2 hours. It was non-stop. You know, we were, but the thing with Bill is it's a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. But Bill could take half an hour to ask a question, but he answers it so brilliantly, and he weaves a story, right? And so when you ask Bill a question, we were hoping to pump in a lot of questions. I mean, you know, I don't know how many we got. We got through quite a few questions with him, but that these are just questions that there are stories on the Project Avalon forum that come up all the time, and things we're tracking that's happening out there now, the Assange stuff and some of the whistleblowers that Bill talks to and Carrie. I mean, there's a whole bunch of big stories. So they just wanted to get Bill's take on it, and he would answer their questions in depth. And in the last half an hour of the show, Carrie Cassidy showed up. Next week, we're going to be talking to Ben Stewart. Do you know who Ben Stewart is?
He created
Esoteric Agenda, a video on YouTube that you can watch called Esoteric Agenda. And his second film was Kymatica. What a brilliant guy this! I would highly recommend.
Look at that. Kymatica.
Kymatica. Yeah.
How do you spell that?
It's Kymatica.
Oh,
Kymatica. And if you go to our website, www.spectrumradionetwork.com, and look at upcoming guests, I've linked the entire video, the whole over an hour video on our site under his name, under Ben Stewart's name, and he'll be with us next week. But there's all kinds of amazing people out, like Dan Winter.
Dan Winter. I want to interview Dan Winter.
Oh, he's one great, smart guy. The only thing I think with Dan is he's so intelligent that it's difficult for him to speak in layman's terms. Like you have to watch his stuff like a bunch of times to go, okay, now I know what he's talking about. But it's sort of like Zachariah Sitchin when he wrote The 12th Planet. You know, it was so technical and scholarly.
Yeah, it's true. You know, a lot of these people, if we just are talking about these portals that are somehow being opened and discovered around the planet, these time-space portals. That's
the Stargates.
Yeah, the Stargates, and that's something I'm really interested in. I interviewed a woman named Patrice Chaplin who was in the Pyrenees down there, René Château area, and found a bunch of those in that area. And those are
natural Stargates.
Yes, and she says, I don't know if I'm supposed to make this public, but she said Howard Hughes went there and then artificially built Stargates after he studied the ones in the Pyrenees, and that's how the whole Philadelphia experiment, Montauk thing, started to get generated from these natural stargates.
Have you talked to Andrew Bashago?
I talked to him briefly. No, I do want to interview him. I know he was part of that time travel program,
Project Pegasus. Yeah,
right. But
we had him on our show as well.
Oh, you did. How was that?
Oh, it's. Okay. Andrew's another guy that you ask him a question, and a half hour later, you know. I mean, but the depth of his answers are incredible, and he knows his stuff inside out and backwards.
But, you know, I did talk to David Anderson, who has a time warp generator. He's working with governments about sending things backwards and forwards into time, and he's doing that now he's working with these elements and this technology. And his
Anderson. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
He's brilliant. He says the next wars are going to be time wars, where you can go back in time, change the past, and then create a new future that didn't even exist before you went back in time. It's like, he says, time technology is the most dangerous weapon we have, and we need to learn how to use it right.
Or it would, see, another angle on that would be, all it would do, and this would be Andrew Bishago's answer, I don't want to speak for him, but I know his work, would be, it would just create another spin-off of, within the multiverse, another, it would create another timeline, and it, you wouldn't alter your original timeline at all.
Well, it does alter it, because it depends which timeline are you in. You know, our timelines may be being altered all the time. We're just not aware of it. So it's like...
Right. I see where you're coming from.
Right. So it's like the original timeline splinters. And it's fascinating, you know?
It's fascinating.
Anderson did the grandfather experiment. He sent something back. A plant. He used plants. He sent a plant back in time, and then he killed the grandfather of that plant. So technically, that plant shouldn't exist, but it came back to the present. It did exist, but its genetics were different than when it left. So that was a timeline shift that he, I think, did to his own reality. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
If I'm not mistaken, he had worked in the Black Projects. I could be wrong,
but I don't know.
now he's doing, his own research, with his own funding, and, he's sort of, you know, he doesn't have the toys that he used to be able to play with. In a Black Op project, you have toys, but the toys don't belong to you. When you leave that project and you want to do your own work, you got to start with your own toys.
But I do think he is developing some amazing things. He's going to release a video where he's actually going to show the time warp generator in use. And he says just witnessing it as a film blows people's minds. It's like what Tom was saying before. It shifts you so you have a deeper understanding. This is what Anderson was saying about his work. It's so far out there. And he's secretive about some stuff, but he's also, I think, a really good guy. And he's doing something really unique.
I'd like to talk to him if you can get me in touch with him.
I will. And okay. I want to get in touch with this guy, Ben Schwartz, too. Ben Stewart.
Ben Stewart. What I highly recommend watching Esoteric Agenda and then watching Chymatica, because it's one of those things that it makes you think. It shifts you. Just watching the shows shifts you. So it's definitely worth it. You know, you've talked to 2,000 people. You know, you've got this huge, broad base of knowledge to draw from. How do people, like, what's the information on your website? How do they watch is your TV show still running?
Yep, my TV show is running every Monday night on Channel 57, Time Warner Television in New York. That's Manhattan Neighborhood Network. Is the main station. So that's Monday. And then I post things on YouTube. So if you go to New Realities, one word, on YouTube, you can see a lot of my programs up there. I only have about 300. But on my website, newrealities.com, I have a lot of those different podcasts from BBS Radio. I post there. I also post the television show. And I also have articles that I think are really relevant to this whole new realm we're moving into. I also produce events in New York. I have a newsletter, so you can send me an email at newrealities@earthlink.net and get on my newsletter and see what's happening for yourself in public. I have a New Realities Film Festival happening in the spring. It's a whole media.
So you're going to be catching some sleep after 2012.
Right. No, that's where it starts to get interesting, I think.
I don't know how you're doing all that. How are you doing all that?
I don't know. I mean, I do have help. I do have like staff. I do have people, well, not full time, but I do have lots of people that I work with and that believe in what I'm doing. Deepak Chopra has been on my program a bunch of times, and he's a very, you know, he's very open to sharing his information with me. He talked about channeling on my television program. I don't think
I've
ever
talked.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, he told me, look, I can say stuff to you. I can't say to NBC and CBS, but I could say it on your show because I know your people will get it. So it's a great honor to meet people. He's like the poster boy. I really think he's very articulate, very intelligent, and very open spiritually, and is a really good person, really trying to do something. So I call him the Michael Jordan of our league, you know?
Yes. That he is.
He's definitely one of the big boys out there. And Nassim's going to be one of the big boys, too.
Oh, Nassim is revolutionary. Yeah, I'm so excited. You know, we sort of know the same players, right? Because there's...
Oh, yeah.
But there's always new guys coming up through the ranks that have some brilliant idea, like this guy Ben Stewart. I mean, he's been around a little while, but he's got something, doesn't he?
Oh, no, he definitely has something. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, there's Dan Winter and Vincent Bridges and
I interviewed Vincent Bridges.
Robert Morning Sky and, you know.
Oh, Vincent Bridges, you should talk to him. His whole
he'll be on the 18th of January.
Oh, good. He's really another. Yeah, there's so many brilliant people and sort of the old timers, too. People like Gene Houston, Barbara Marx Hubbard. I attended something called the Evolutionary Leaders in last August. They had brilliant people there. I mean, J.J. Hertog, who's been around since 1973, he wrote The Keys of Enoch, had a 3-day ascension experience where he went to the high heavens and met Enoch and Metatron and was downloaded this whole thing called Future Science. The Academy for Future Science is what they started. There's so many exciting people coming forward now. It really is a new heaven and a new earth we're entering. So thank you for letting me share my enthusiasm, both of you.
Hey, you know, we're on the same page, I think. We're all part of the same community. You know,
yeah, I'd love to hear some of those case studies because I'm writing about UFO abductions as well. And
we can definitely share some information.
Get a hold of Tom.
I will. What's your email, Tom, if you want it?
It's P as in Peter, R as in Ralph, A as in Apple, 4536 at yahoo.ca.
Okay.
Or just info.
Or info at
spectrumradionetwork.com. Tom has not just his collection of 30 years of UFO research. There's some UFO researchers that have been in the field longer than him that when they pass their way, they willed their collections of all of their research to him.
So, wow. I mean,
Tom has, and that happened half a dozen times. He's got a whole house full, a warehouse full. He's got it.
Where are you guys located?
Toronto.
You're both in Toronto?
I'm in Toronto. Scott is in Hamilton.
Yeah.
Hamilton?
Yeah. He's just outside of Toronto, about half an hour outside of Toronto.
Oh, you're both Canadians. Well,
yep.
Good. I'm glad you're taking
this. We're the
this
Canadian in- UFO guys.
You are. You're the main guys in Canada.
Well,
huh?
Tom's the main guy. He was the president of MUFON Ontario that split away from MUFON International in 93.
Well, Stanton Friedman's living in Canada, isn't he?
Ooh,
yeah, he's down in the Maritimes.
Really well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's down in the Maritimes.
He's in the Maritimes. Oh, yeah, on the Atlantic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe I'll do a show with you guys on some UFO stuff, okay?
Most definitely. Most
have definitely. You interviewed Richard Dolan about his new book?
Not yet.
I'm trying to get him, too. I put a word out for him. But, yeah, let's just keep
let's
playing.
End it here. Let's end it here, and okay. Then we will get together on the other side. We'll We'll talk again. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about. We'll stay on the line and chat.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me be a guest on the show and talking about what I really love.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, guys.